seated.
So you heard Jesus lay out today a very, very important principle in Christian life and in life in general, that there is a connection between spiritual things and visible things. That you can't have a spiritual law that contradicts a natural law. Now, a spiritual law may transcend it, may be higher than it, may be too difficult for the natural to truly understand, but when the natural submits to the supernatural, things start to make sense. And poor Nicodemus, he has lived in the world for so long that he began to become like everybody else. When you live in the world for so long, it's so hard to imagine a different one. And the good example will be when you left elementary school and you go to high school. World completely changes. Games, totally different. Old rules, gone. The same thing happens when you graduate from high school and then all of a sudden everything you thought was important about high school, gone. Everything changes. And then when some of these people got married, old life, gone. And then when I became a priest, the bishop asked me a little while ago, I said, I can't even remember what it's like not to be a priest. And I've only been a priest for 3 years. Not even three. That's me being generous. So a higher rule builds off the lower one, but it doesn't destroy what came before it. And this is really important about Jesus. Jesus is a Jew. And everything that we do in the Catholic Church has its origins in the Jewish life. And the first and most important thing is what happens at this ambo right here. This ambo symbolizes the synagogue of the people of Israel. We still have synagogues. There's one on Blanchard Street. The synagogues are a place where the people of Israel gather together around the Word of God to hear Him speak. They would read, obviously, the first five books of the Old Testament, Genesis, Deuteronomy, Leviticus, Numbers. Oh, dear Lord. Thank you. Oh, I forgot. Thank you, Mr. Brock. We all need to go back to school every now and again. So they would go and they would listen to these books, but they would also listen to the words of the prophets. Now, we as Christians, obviously, we added a few books of our own. In the Easter season, we don't read from the Old Testament. We read from the early history of Christianity in the Acts of the Apostles, which is a part of the Bible, where you hear about the apostles proclaiming that Jesus has risen from the dead and all of the works that come with it. And of course, what you also hear is that all of these Christians held all of their goods in common. That the great miracle for them was that all of these people now saw their end as one. Rich and poor, slave and free, men and women all saw each other as equals in the same community of faith. They had different functions, they had different roles, they had different expectations. But just because one was an apostle and another was a disciple did not mean that the apostles were better than others. And the apostles reminded themselves and other people of this fact. That the Church of God gathers around the proclamation of the Word, just as the people of Israel did, to deepen their trust in God's promises for the future. You have to be fed here. And that's what this is for. We have to be fed in our minds. We have to be able to think. We have to be able to reason, because God made the mind. And He wants you to use it. Which is why this parish and all the other parishes spend a lot of money for your education. Your parents are spending money on your education, but believe it or not, you see these strangers that are sitting in the pew here? They pay for your school too. It comes out of the collection basket, the very thing that you heard about in today's first reading.
So the church gathers together these resources so that the common good can happen. The next symbol that you see that is connected, and it's only in Easter, so I'll just bring it up anyway, this is the Paschal candle. It's a symbol of the resurrection. It's that the light of Christ is now guiding the people, just as a pillar of fire guided the people of Israel as they wandered in the wilderness. Now this pillar of fire stands before the church. And of course, some of you may have noticed if you come to church, we've stopped the procession, the gospel procession with the candles. It's redundant. The candle is here. That's just a little aside. I figured since it's Easter time, let's just do it. The second thing is the altar. This altar is the table where God feeds his people and the altar of sacrifice. It's both. That we make our offerings to God on this altar, and then from these offerings, God feeds us with himself. And this is why another area where we have to learn that relationship between spiritual and human, we know what it's like to be hungry. We know exactly what it's like to be hungry. But sometimes we forget what it's like to hunger for God. But that's not true. We know exactly what it's like to hunger for God. We just don't know that it's God we hunger after. We think, oh, well, you know, I want people to love me. No, that's because you want God's love. I want to be respected. That's because you want to be able to do good and to be known for it. And only God's opinion truly matters. We all want to be fed. And God here feeds us with his own body. But this is really important, and this is something that the early Christians recognized right away, is that God, in his humility, doesn't show himself powerful and then make his body truly present here. He makes it truly present, but not visibly present. We can't see him. He says, "This is my body." And we have to take him at his word. That's the hard part. We see the bread, and we have to make the connection that we need to be fed with that bread. But he doesn't want to just make it easy. He wants us to deepen this appreciation that when he says, "I have the power and the authority to change this bread into something else," that we have enough trust in his word that we believe it can happen. And that happens only by one ministry, the goofball that sits in that chair. The three main symbols in any church are the ambo, the altar, and the priest's chair. And the reason why the priest has a chair is, first of all, because he just needs to sit down. But it's also a place where he sits in the place of Jesus. And this is something that makes, let's just say, some tingles go up my back every now and again. I happen to watch a lot of superhero movies because I find them to be much more interesting than boring dramas. Yeah. I just saw Batman versus Superman. It's a lot better than the critics are saying. By the way, hint, hint. But the reason why those stories are more interesting to me than dramas is because I identify more with those characters than I do with the boring characters in dramas. Because they're normal people dealing with amazing powers. This power was not something that was given to me for my own sake. I don't sit there because I'm pretty. I don't sit there because I'm smart. I don't sit there because I'm thin and beautiful, because I'm not thin. If you look really closely, I have a special bulge that has been so long that it doesn't even jiggle anymore. It's just there. I don't sit in that chair because I'm capable. It's because of what the sacrament of the priesthood is. We need Jesus, not just in the past, as Mr. Brock said before you came inside the church, but now. Now, we would love to be able to have perfect priests. Smart, capable, beautiful, thin, you know, all of those different capabilities and characteristics. But that's not truly what we need. All of those nice things are just gravy or a cherry on top of a good Sunday. What we need is the meat of who Jesus is. The one who can forgive us, the one who can feed us, and the one who can bind us together. And that's my job. My job is the unity of the church, the teaching and preaching of the gospel, and the feeding and forgiving of the people of God. And then they have to put up with all of my failings. And let's just say, guys, there's a whole bunch of them. But I'll add one little thing, which I found to be very beneficial, is that God doesn't take away the foolishness from the church. I truly believe that if you were to gather all the money in the world to build one parish church, it would be unworthy of that parish's dignity. I'll say this again. If you were to gather all of the money in the world to build one church, it would be unworthy of the people and the sacrament that are gathered there. What happens here is the most important, earth-shattering, creation-fulfilling thing that can ever happen. God makes himself present and visible to us. But he also hides. Just as Jesus walked the earth 2,000 years ago, and everybody spent a very, very long time trying to figure out, can this guy be the guy who he says he is? And they're constantly in this whole feeling of, this is awesome but scary. This is great but confusing. When you come into church, is that not exactly how you feel? Even these people that have been coming to church for 50, 60, whatever years, they still come in here and say, what on earth is Father going to do next? They have no idea. And then when Father comes in here and he's praying in there, sitting in that chair where you, sir, right there are seated, all of a sudden it's 8:20 and he's like, oh, the high school's coming in, I completely forgot. He has no idea what's happening. But this is why we understand that God is greater than our intentions. And that we really realize that this is the place where we encounter him. And the last thing is that once you have been fed here, it's meant to change what you do out there. The money that the people laid at the apostles' feet was not simply to build nice churches. They did do that. But what they did, especially, was to care for the poor, widows, and orphans. Now, some of the ladies and gentlemen you see here, they normally like to come here, and then after Mass, they do some work afterwards. And now they're going to be like, "Man, Father, we're going to be late." Sorry. I'm not sorry. I don't want to lie to you. What they're going to do is they're going to go downstairs right after Mass and start working for charity. For the good of people, for the poor, for those who live on the streets in this city, raising money and raising resources so that these people can be taken care of. And I'm pretty sure none of you ever heard of it before. It's a rummage sale. It's going to come up in the next few weeks. And you don't need to know. It's good if you show up, but you don't need to know. Because they're doing it for God. That being fed by this altar, they have to now feed the world. And this is what shows real Christian faith. Not that we can make these pews really warm from the imprint of our butts that have been sitting on them for 40 minutes. But what we do when we get up. So the word Mass comes from the word Misa. Get, sent, go. So at the very end, when I say the Mass is ended, or go in peace, or all of the different options. What that means is, get to work. Make this world a better place. reveal God's action in your lives. Because the great miracle of the church is not just that we can proclaim the gospel and then eat the bread of life and be gathered around some fool. It's that we live in community. It's that we live in love, and that we were different than we started.